This is Edward Shaw, and I'm here with Matt DiNardo, interviewing him on just his career and meteorology overall. So when did you first become interested in meteorology?
Oh boy. So I first was fascinated by weather. In 1978, kindergarten, we had a blizzard, 1978 blizzard come through, dropped 29 inches of snow at my house. That was like the first real weather system that I remember. And then growing up, different thunderstorms and stuff like that always had me pretty fascinated.
So it all just overall kind of interested you over time right after that. But that was like the big moment.
That was the big moment, yeah. As you remember, in third grade, sitting in Mr. O'Leary's class, and from that point on, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and it turned pitch black outside, and we had a set of windows on one side of the room. I ran over to the windows to see what was going on outside while everybody else was being pulled away from the windows. Turned out there was a tornado on Long Island, which is a pretty rare event. So that was pretty cool. And then in eighth grade, I was in honor science, took earth science, and that was like the coup de grace for me. At that point, I mean, I had no idea there was a study of weather, and then to be interested in, to learn about meteorology, from that point on, I was really hooked.
Oh, for sure. And I'm sure the teachers were really happy when you ran towards the window, too.
Yeah, that was, I was called to the principal's office, shockingly enough.
Okay, so with all the different occupations involving meteorology, what drew you to the broadcast side of it?
So that was kind of something that just happened. When I went into college, I thought I would go to the National Weather Service, you know, work behind the scenes, do forecasting, government, etc. While in college, I did an internship with the National Weather Service in Albany, New York. I also did an internship at the ABC affiliate in Albany, and their meteorologist, who's still there today, Steve Caparizzo, really explained to me how to take what I was learning in the classroom and apply it to TV. And he did it in such a way that it made me want to do television. I was never afraid to talk in front of people. And that was supposed to be 8 weeks for an internship, turned into 2 years of internship, volunteer study, you know, volunteer work, whatever. And he helped me get my first job out of college.
Wow, okay. So with that being said, what is your daily routine from the moment you walk in to the moment you head out?
So I start my day a lot earlier than most people would ever even imagine. I wake up at 2:15 every morning. That's Monday to Friday mornings. I do have weekends off. I'm at work by 3 o'clock. For the first hour to hour and 15 minutes, I'm doing what I call my homework. That is, I'm looking at weather models, I'm figuring out what the forecast is going to be, I'm physically writing it down on a piece of paper, and then from that piece of paper, I have to then hit a bunch of keystrokes, and I put it in kind of a template that will help to build the forecast graphics for the day. Highs, lows, you know, weather icons, 7 day, all that stuff. And then I have to then do the closed captioning for the hearing impaired for the television audience, set up the web stuff, get that going, and then also some other little things, you know, push alerts and, you know, updates on apps and stuff like that. And I'm on the air at 4:27. So from 3 o'clock to 4:27, I mean, I'm hauling. 4:27 to 7 a.m., I'm on the show, which is Good Morning Richmond. And then Good Morning America takes over from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., but I'm not really done because there are breaks for news in there. The main ones are when Ginger Z does her forecast. She says, here's what's happening in your local area. Then I pop on. That's a taped piece. However, at 7:25, 7:55, 8:25, and 8:55, those are live news break headlines, and we do live stuff there. And then from 9 to 10, we do 8 News at 9. And then my on-air day is done, and I start to do some cleanup work for the shows that I just finished, but I also do prep work for the next day. Some stuff that I can get done ahead of time.
So there's a lot more that goes into it behind the scenes than people might realize just from watching off their couch in the morning.
Right. I get 2 minutes on air every time I come on, roughly speaking, but there's a lot of work to be done to make those 2 minutes happen.
Sure. Let's see. All right. So when you were in college, what was your overall experience like? Did you do any field work? Was it mostly research-based?
Interesting. So I ended up going into broadcast. However, I did not go to a broadcast school. I went to a school, the State University of New York at Albany, which at the time when I entered was the number 3 school in the country for meteorology, or atmospheric science, as it's known. It is all theory. It's 5 semesters of calculus, 3 semesters of physics, 2 semesters of chemistry, and then you're able to take weather. But everything is theory-based. There was not a professor there that did broadcast. I mean, these guys wrote huge papers, are published, you know, in major books in my field. I had amazing learning experience from them. But the amount of material that I had to learn, and we had to learn, was incredible for this degree. And I used probably a fraction of it for the television audience, because you don't care about the 6-page formula of why it rains. You just want to know what time is the rain coming, what time is the rain ending. So
Yeah, it's pretty much just, is my game going to be rained out?
Right, or how much snow am I getting, or how cold is it going to be?
Is school going to be canceled?
Right, exactly. That's, I mean, so that's the simplified version of it. But, I mean, I would go back to that same college again and do it all over again. I might study a little bit more. Not that I was a bad student, but, I mean, there are some things I think I could have done better, but I loved every minute of it. You know, in Albany, we kind of estimated that there was about 75 to 100 students that wanted to pursue the degree of meteorology, atmospheric science. We graduated a total of 6. So that's how incredible the weed out process is. Yeah, and 3 of us actually went to television for a non-broadcast school. Very interesting.
That's crazy.
So 2 of them went on to PhDs, another 2 went to the Weather Service, and that was pretty much it.
So there's a lot more than just like studying specific weather that you got to know beforehand, like going again with it, the calculus, the physics, just all that.
Right. Everything we do is based on differential equations and physics, because the atmosphere, the sky is a fluid. I mean, you don't think of it that way. You think of it as air, but air is a fluid. So there's ways that it is supposed to behave. It never does behave like that. If it behaved like it's supposed to, we'd be 100% correct all the time. That's just not the case, right? So there are things that happen that we don't know. There, the equations that we use to make weather happen are still not perfect, right? So, and then the data collection is not perfect. So if you have bad data going in and you run these equations, and you have to make these weather models we use, the bad data gets blown up, even magnified even more, and that could cause a big time problem. That's the simple reason as to why we always say, don't go ahead and believe the 10-day GFS snowfall forecast.
Right.
Because bad data in puts the biggest snowstorm on the East Coast ever. And then the next data run, that data is gone because it was bad. And all of a sudden, oh, it's rain in 50? You know.
Surprise.
Right. Shocking.
So with that, that being said, do you feel like just with the improvements in technology and the changes in technology in the industry, but also the changes with the world and the climate, do you feel like forecasting has gotten easier or harder?
I think it's twofold. Certainly our computers have gotten better. And the models we're using are of higher resolution and can go out farther in time. But they still can't go out, you know, the highest resolution can still not go out past maybe 30, 36 hours, right? And then you have to downgrade the resolution a bit. But they have gotten better, and they give us better clues, better ideas as to what's going on. But weather is changing dramatically. Case in point, let's just go back to the past couple of days. Within the past 2 weeks, we have seen tremendous flooding in Venice, Italy.
Oh, for sure.
And so part of that is the fact that snow is melting on the mountains that shouldn't be melting. It's causing rivers to rise, because now it should be cold enough in the mountains outside of Venice to hold that. It's not, right? You go back a couple weeks before that, some of the worst Santa Ana winds ever in California history to create massive wildfires. And then go back a couple of months before that, and you have Dorian. Dorian went from a Category 1 storm. We all knew it was going to develop, and I kept saying this will become a Category 5. Never in my wildest dreams did I think it would go from a Category 1 to a Category 5 in 24 hours and be the strongest hurricane to ever make landfall. That's incredible. But there are some things that are happening that, you know, is making it difficult for sure.
Yeah, especially with, like, the more severe stuff where, like, more's on the line with, like, potential loss of property, loss of life,
right.
Stuff like that. So I can imagine.
At the end of the day, that's what we're here for. Yes, every meteorologist forecasts the weather day to day, somehow, somewhere, right? For whatever they're doing. But at the end, it's about protecting lives and protecting property.
So, are there any? Is there any specific memory or any experience you've had over however long you've worked, whether it be college, broadcasting, internship, what you're doing right now? Has there been any memory that's been your favorite?
Oh, I've had so many. So I've been doing this on the air for 26 years. I did 2+ year internship, as we talked about. You know, I remember, so Honors Earth Science is what really got me to where I am, right, in terms of wanting to do this. The year after Honors Earth Science, Hurricane Gloria crossed central Long Island, the eye came over my house. I was outside for the entire storm. There were power lines flying around, trees coming down. It was unbelievable. I mean, but I wanted to experience that, so I did. I do everything we tell people not to do, so don't, you know, don't do what I'm telling you to do.
So here's the disclaimer.
Right, exactly. In 1993, you can go ahead and do a Google search, Superstorm 93. It's going to pull up this amazing storm that formed and gave portions of the mountains in North Carolina 45 inches of snow and raked tremendous snowfall up and down the entire East Coast. And where I was in Albany, and I was working behind the scenes at that television station, we had something like 30 inches. It was incredible. We had about an hour break where the kind of lessened up. My buddy had a four-wheeler, so we went out, I mean, literally to get some food. I mean, we were kicking it all over the place. That was fun. But pretty wild. So that was amazing. January 94, one of the most severe Arctic outbreaks in Northeast history. My backyard thermometer, which was put in the right spot, but after a while it gets corroded because our snowpack got so high, measured minus 40 Fahrenheit. That's not wind chill. That way, I mean, it's, you hear trees popping because the sap is freezing. I mean, wow. It was wild, right? Otherwise, it's dead silent. The reason why I'm down here today, Christmas Day 2002, we all knew a snowstorm was coming. We all knew it was going to be bad. I went to an early dinner at my in-law's house. About 1 o'clock, I'm looking outside. I'm going, this isn't good. I got to get to work. Got to work, and it came down. Portions of my market had 8 to 12 inches of snow, which is what we forecasted for that area. To the east, we were forecasting 12 to 24. Some places ended up with 50 inches of snow. I mean, it was off the charts. It was crazy.
That's wild.
And then, you know, down here, my literally third month down here, I started in April 2004, so maybe it's the fourth month. August 30th, 2004, is Gaston. I'm on the air by myself. John is off, and... you know, everybody's calling for, you know, 1 to 3, 2 to 5 inches of rain and whatever, and tornadoes are popping, and I'm on the air at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm looking at this signature on radar going, oh wow, we're really gonna get destroyed. This is not 2 to 5 inches of rain. This is gonna be some of the worst flooding. So I literally said on the air, while tracking tornadoes that are rain wrapped, F0, very small type stuff, I said, folks, we need to stop with the tornadoes now. That's not gonna be the focus of this. We are going to see the worst flooding in the history of Richmond. I guarantee it, based on what I'm seeing on radar. And the story that I hear, because I'm on the air broadcasting live, is that my two managers jumped over their desk, ran into the control room, pressed the button that talks to me in my ear, and said, do you have any idea what you're talking about? And I responded with, I just want to reiterate again, while we're covering tornadoes, the singular most important thing is we're going to see the worst flooding in Richmond City history. I will guarantee you that right now. The next thing I see is one of my managers around the corner with a piece of paper and a pen that says, don't go off the air, we're calling everybody in. And everybody knows Gaston, 14 inches, and I mean, the damage was incredible.
It was really bad in Richmond from what I've heard.
Crazy. So yeah, so I mean, that's some of the things, right? I mean, was that a half a dozen and we sat here for 5 minutes?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's so much more. And then last year, you guys are locked in school.
Oh, like, yeah.
I mean, the Florence tornadoes. I mean, literally, I'm tracking a spin of 107 miles an hour on the other side of Hampton Park, crossing Hull Street. And as you know, Ed, my daughter goes to Cosby, and you guys are letting out a 256, and it's 254. I mean,
And there's tornadoes just
literally 100 feet away. Right. And my stomach dropped. And I gulped because I'm like, oh, wow. And I continued going. And it was the next morning that I actually broke down and cried on air, because the worst fear any meteorologist ever has could have happened. Tracking a tornado that hits your loved one and you can't do anything about it because you're doing your job on air. You know, I mean, there was damage in Hampton Park and there was damage in the Foxes. It literally, we have the radar. It skipped over Cosby.
Yeah, and I remember just from my point of view, the way everybody was reacting to it and just the experience from being in the hallway and then looking out and being like, it was just kind of unreal, it felt like. Yeah. And then I'm sure it felt like that to you, too.
Very unreal. And then getting texts from Alex while I'm on the air. Are we okay? Are we okay? And I can't respond, right? So, yeah, probably, you know, something I never want to relive again.
Yeah. So it sounds like just like while there's a lot of, but like, yeah, it sounds like with meteorology and whether it's long-term forecasting, broadcasting, I'll do it. Anything relating to that, it just it seems like every day's different.
Almost. Yeah, 100%. And I think that's why I like it. Every day's a challenge, right? I mean, you know, tomorrow we have rain coming in, and how much will it rain, and how will it affect somebody's day, and, you know, is Saturday going to be a washout? Those types of things, right? But then on the other side of it, you know, there are those days you string together, 90, 95 in summer, and nothing ever happens, you know, kind of like this summer. But, you know, then sometimes you get this weak front that comes across and, you know, it pops a thunderstorm. That thunderstorm grows like crazy. You know, so you get some things that really make it changeable. And then, you know, every couple of weeks you get some sort of decent system that really makes you think and puts you on your toes and make sure you have your game going on.
For sure. And then it's kind of like, what was I going to say? I just completely blanked out.
It's all good. It's all good.
Whatever, I'll think of it. Okay. I'll think of it randomly.
That's fine, no problem.
Yeah, is there anybody, like, in particular that you look...
Up to as a role model?
Yeah, just, like, as a role model?
Yeah, so, I mean, 100% my mentor, the guy who, you know, taught me, Steve Caparizzo, he's not only my best friend, he's my daughter's godfather. I mean, we've become so close, you know, so... But he is absolutely, you know, a role model in my profession, you know, by far. I don't know that I have any other role model. I have some people that I really do look up to. One of the guys that I came in this business with, we were both part-time together at my first job, is actually one of our corporate VPs of news. And he and I bounce ideas off each other all the time. But I do call him for advice and stuff like that. And we talk about the interesting side of the business, because I'm not a news person, I'm a science guy, but I always have ideas, and sometimes he thinks I'm, you know, off the wall, but that's fine, you know, so, but yeah, those are probably the two, I would say.
So, all right, last question. So, if there's one thing that you wish everybody who wakes up, watches you on TV in the morning, if there's one thing that you wish they knew, whether it be about meteorology, about your profession, or anything else involving the industry, what would that one thing be?
We are not perfect, and we will never claim to be. We make mistakes just like everybody does in their job. Our job is on TV, so you see that mistake. You see that bad forecast, and we will always 100% own up to it. But every day we go in and we do the best we can, and you're always going to get everything that I got and every piece of knowledge that I have coming at you. And I think my viewers who watch us get that, and I think they understand that. I am 100% real with my viewers, and I thank them a lot for watching. They know how what a treat it is for me to be able to do this.
All right, well, thank you, Matt.
No problem. Anytime, man.